This week on Reality Check, we're speaking with Court Boyce, Curry County Commissioner, about the issues on his mind that affect us all in Curry County. Hi, Court. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, Lee, thank you very much for the invite and the opportunity to visit with your listeners and just be able to talk to those that live here and love it here and want to make a difference. We'll do our best to reach out to those folks today.
That sounds great with me. I really want to dig into the issues that you think are most important. You sent me some items that I've looked over because I am, as I mentioned earlier to you when we weren't on the air, that I'm pretty much a novice at local politics. But I noticed so many things were oriented around the fires and what's going on to prevent future fires, recover from the old fires, all of that. Would you like to explain to people where you're seeing that whole process right now and what we're doing to prepare for the future?
You know, my initials are CB, and sometimes people around Oregon go, oh, there's that Commissioner Chetko Barr is going to talk about prevention again. So I've had a little fun with that, Lee. But it's a good place to start. Prevention of these catastrophic fires. I mean, we all understand that normal burns are a part of nature and normally a good thing. But the fuel loads in the county offices, which is the most rugged, the most beautiful, the most unique national forest in North America. And so with that in mind, those fires are very difficult to put out. In fact, if the managing agencies don't get them put out in the first 10 to 15 days, a lot of times they can't get them put out. So those fuel loads that we have, and from previous fires, my goodness, we're, as a community, still processing the Biscuit Fire, which is the largest fire in Oregon history, just shy of, as you know, 500,000 acres, 500,000 acres.
2003, so that's 16
yes,
years ago.
Very
you
good.
We're still processing that. In what way?
In the loss, in the snags that become obviously volatile fuel for future catastrophic fires, some call nuclear fires. And we're losing what the technical term is, our herbivores. You know, the deer and the elk, that a deer will eat 7 pounds of grass and brush a day, keep the forest floor clear. The elk will eat 20-25 pounds a day, and so we lose those wonderful creatures in fires. We lose them to disease, we lose them to vehicles, of course I'm not anti-hunting, but you know, we have to manage that very well too. And but taking those deer and elk out of the population, it affects us. And so that's just one aspect.
I remember you said something like, was it 10 million animals were lost in the last fires?
In the Biscuit Fire, the 500,000 acres, they believe, scientists have calculated, birds and animals, 22 per acre. And so yes, that the math on that is 10 million. And it's hard, unless you've flown over it, to understand how vast that devastation is. And so no, these are not normal fires. And so I'm very proud to have been put on the governor's Wildfire Recovery Council. And there's only been the 40 members, there's only two other county commissioners. And so I think we're effective. I think we're contributing. I think we have a lot to offer in the whole enlightened or updated future of our forest lands management program. And so that's just something that all Oregonians, we have to save our forest. That's part of our heritage, part of our history. And we're losing that at quite an alarming rate per year.
I know when we had our big fire, Chetko Barr Fire, I almost blanked on the name there.
That's okay.
I had occasion to fly from Portland to San Francisco, and on the way back, I had a window seat, and those little tiny windows, there wasn't 1 second the whole time I flew over Oregon that I couldn't see at least one, often two or three fires at any given moment, somewhere in that little opening of the window of the plane. And some of them, I mean, I suppose we were at 30,000 feet, I could actually see the flames. It was unbelievable. It was like a holocaust.
That aerial view is for lack of a better term, it is an eye-opener when you can see that in the satellite photos of the smoke, the direction it goes, the thickness of the density of the smoke. In Brookings that August, we had 13 days of very hazardous smoke, which just is terrible for our kids, our older folks. And so we're learning what we have to do to mitigate this entire thing. The Oregon's forests are so dense, and so what the scientists call, the professionals call, the one-hour ground fuels, the ladder fuels, that, see, normally, I think a lot of people are aware that the old growth are fire resistant. That's mm-hmm. why nature made them. And mm-hmm. so, but that's in a 1200 degree normal fire. But when you get in the 2200 degree fires, they can't withstand
it. They just get that intensity going, and nothing can get in the way of that.
And the ground fuels burn so hot.
Yeah.
And that's why the instincts of the animals, they really don't know what to do. In a normal fire, their instincts can get them to safety as a general rule.
Right. They can outrun it, perhaps, but not when it's this intense and this fast. I know when you see an old growth grove somewhere, you know, they're clean underneath. They're just absolutely park-like. Because that canopy is going to shade out a lot of things. But once you've got the cycle we've got going now, it's been not really dealt with properly for a long time.
Yeah, and see, that's part of the thinning process. That's one of the solutions that we are going to be making a report to the governor in September. And everyone knows that basically we have too many trees per acre because we didn't thin early on. That's why federal law and state law as well requires on the reproduction to do a minimum of 350 trees per acre. But a really healthy forest is about 150 to 200 second growth trees per acre. Or if it's old growth and you leave it, then you still have to thin that underbrush. You still have to manage that forest floor. And of course, most say the deer and the elk are nature's weed eaters, lawnmowers. So we have to bring back those populations. That's one. And then we need more timber harvest sales, green timber. And we can't have fuel abatement, Lee, without road access. It just, we have to be able to get, if I had my way, and I'm working on this, I'd have from the California, Oregon to the Coos County border, 100-foot strip, basically to, as a fire block, anchor points for between those two sections to protect Gold Beach, Agnes, Brookings, Harbor. The density of the forest is
like
a major concern.
Like 100-foot strip of basically clear-cut fire break?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
You know, at least 50 feet on each side of a roadway. That gives the firemen a safe place to hold the line, again, an anchor point, and that's where they can make a stand.
It's quite an interesting idea.
Well, it's a major one, but I don't see any other options mm-hmm. with the winds we have here. If we do have climate change, and that's arguable, whatever that outcome is, we have to respond and react without being reactive and set ourselves up for success. And that's doable. We're starting to get help at the federal and state level, and yeah, I was telling the Board of Commissioners the other day that. With public lands, with rivers management, with forest management, fire prevention, I'm spending half my time as a commissioner because I think this is just such a critical issue. And we, you know, the fire. Anyway, you're going to have a question. I'm sorry.
Well, back to that fire break. Now, you said that you thought that was maybe improbable for actually getting that to happen. Did I understand you correctly?
No, I can't accept that. That would be a defeat.
Okay, and, so that is what you're working on. You do want that to happen.
It's going
to
take some time, but
yeah.
There's logic and rational thinking behind that. And if it's not 100 feet, hopefully 25 feet on each side.
So it would be like basically a road running to the east of these towns
mm-hmm.
that would protect us. And also...
It would be connecting existing roads, too.
Yeah,
of course.
I mean, you would have to.
Yeah.
I mean, with our terrain, you're not going to build a superhighway.
No.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be necessary.
So, but I mean, that's going to add a lot of access to the logging companies and so forth. Would they be then responsible for building at least most of it?
You know, the timber companies, especially here, uh-huh. are very responsible in their reforestation program and their road maintenance program. I just couldn't say enough good. I had the pleasure of seeing actually the sadness of the Progeny reforestation plant that was burned in the Czech Cobar fire, which were the owner of South Coast that passed here recently, a mm-hmm. wonderful contributor to this community, and just a tremendous quality man. Those little seedlings, that was something that was really his pride and joy, and he wouldn't accept fir trees, Doug fir trees out of Washington. They had to be Curry County seedlings that were native and natural and appropriate for this area. And so he showed me that where they had burned and what the loss was, and I think honestly it hurt his heart more than the 12,000 acres that he lost in that fire. So
yeah,
but that's the point.
He had like a little seedling farm.
Oh yes, it's a plantation.
A plantation.
Yes.
So how many acres?
Because see, the Forest Service is limitedly.
How many seedlings did he lose?
I think it was a couple hundred acres.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but he, you know, the reason I mention that is because you ask of the lumber companies, timber companies. I mean, they take on that responsibility. I mean, we're all watching, but they need to be encouraged and get those compliments for jobs well done. And so those seedlings were for quickly going in the ground.
Yeah.
as soon as they harvested their land.
Well, you know, that I guess that brings me to sort of an overarching question when I ask about the lumber companies building this road, if it could happen. And that is that, you know, again, I'm so naive when it comes to local government, but my understanding is that basically we're very allergic to any taxation. And so this project and a lot of projects that I read about in the paperwork you gave me, they all sounded like they were going to take some money. In this case, you're talking about having the forest companies do it, or the most of it. But in terms of, like you were talking about the gravel bar a while ago before we got on the air, and the dredging that has to happen there, are these things you can go to the government, federal government, or maybe state for funding, or how does that work?
Well, there's where I think Curry County, and I use Brookings as a very valid example of what has happened in Oregon. No city or section of Oregon has been hit as hard as Brookings. When you look, Lee, at the 2011 tsunami, the 2014 sinkhole, when you look at the major fires we've had, mm-hmm. look at the critical highway access, the cutoff had. Look at the April floods. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure about climate change. When you have that much high water, though, in April, it makes you pause for just a moment. And so the point is, Brookings, now 80% of their watershed and harbor as well has been damaged in the Czech Cobar fire. So as local public officials, we have to take that seriously, and we have to be aggressive to say, state, federal government, here's what happened. This is not our doing. Our people are suffering from smoke. Our people are suffering from the shelves being, almost empty in certain parts of the community during the Husqvarna slide. And so we're not sitting there with our hand out, but we are giving rational arguments on why this is legitimate and why we have to get help.
And that's about being called a disaster area.
Well, it's
disaster relief.
There's some real complex qualifications involved with that.
Yeah.
My point is, my approach is that when you collectively put all this together and really do an assessment of how hard this community has been hit in the last 10 years, there shouldn't be any argument.
And we're already a really poor community, so being able to afford these things on our own is really hard.
But that message is getting out. It takes a little time, but I've been very determined, needless to say, and I feel responsible to do that. And so I'm gaining ground to be appointed on the governor's program. I've got an ear there, and I'm taking that and turning that advantage to, this is what's best for my community. This is, and we're just talking about the fire. There's lots of other issues that we've got to do our best to solve. And that's been a great part of this job, is meeting people that really care. And made a tremendous number of new friends, and they're committed, and they're helping, and they're greatly valued.
So getting back to the fire issues, one thing would be putting in this giant fire break. And another thing is that we've lost the seedlings. What other issues about that? I mean, I think there's a lot of erosion into the Chetco and maybe into the Rogue as well. I'm not sure about the Rogue, but I know that's been a concern of other guests that I've interviewed here, that the Chetco has been so compromised one way or another. I would imagine that's part of the package you're putting together.
Excellent question.
Yeah.
You know, when you go the east-west ridge in the Kalmiopsis, mm-hmm. two of the most pristine rivers in North America, the Idaho folks can make some arguments that they have more pristine or equal to Southwest Oregon, of course. But you have the Chetco coming down the south side and the Illinois, essentially twin rivers coming down the west side, the north side, and it's kind of northwest. But anyway, mm-hmm. The amount of soil that we have lost due to these fires, if you just took that issue, mm-hmm. and really did an evaluation on what that means to our watershed, what that means to our wildlife habitat. Just take those two things. It is staggering. I run on the beach once in a while in Gold Beach when I come down from Agnes. Well, I trot, you know, it's at my age. But if you went there now, and here we spent thousands of dollars to encourage visitors to come here. Our beaches are full of burned logs. Mm-hmm. And Lee, they're from four different fires. Now, you can't pinpoint for sure which fire for which tree.
Right.
But if you got a rotten log and it's burned inside, it could be from the Biscuit. It could be from the Silver Fire in 1987. The point is this. That came down with the soil. And that's also what's happening at the Chetco. And yes, we'll heal. But in that healing period, we don't know in the next couple, 3 years, even 10 years, what we're going to be dealing with. So we've got to draw national attention to this, and I have, we have. And so, but you do make a really good point there. What kind of soils, and then how far does it go into the depth and bring additional and above or abnormal amounts of gravel and sediment and aggregate and mm-hmm. so a rock. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're facing the Rogue a little bit in the Chetco.
So when you were talking a little while ago about needing to deal with the gravel at the mouth of the Rogue, do you mm-hmm. think that might be fire related or no idea really?
I think it's a combination. Mm-hmm. It's the Kalmiopsis is the temperature of the Illinois, for example, mm-hmm. it's such a pristine river. It is so cool because of the shade.
Yeah, and we've lost
had there
a
for
lot
years,
of that.
And you lose so much of that shade, which is horrible on the fish. Mm-hmm. And I live on the Illinois, just up from Agnes, and so it's kind of one hit after another. Not to sound whiny, but when you put it all together. Mm-hmm. And then you finally go to our beaches mm-hmm. and you see all these burned logs. Not every log is burned, but it's not normal. And it's not from normal fires, which I can suggest we can appreciate. But these abnormal burns that burn so hot and just destroy everything because of the winds, because of the temperature, because of the ground fuels, it's pretty daunting and sometimes even demoralizing to see that. But you can't quit. You can't give up. You got to push back. And
push
we are.
Back. And I guess one of the things I worry about is the salmon fishery, because I know the silting up and the lack of cover and that when the river is running, it runs faster and, you know, there isn't room for them to do their spawning thing. I mean, I'm not using the proper terms like a scientist would.
You're doing fine.
But the salmon are having a hard time, and then the water temperature's higher and all these things. And I remember hearing a while back that the salmon were all outside the mouth of the Rogue and they weren't coming up. Like they're waiting for the right conditions and they just weren't happening. And so the fires have a big impact on that, as well as, you know, our water quality and all kinds of things when we really think about it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you mention water quality, because that's our bragging rights. When you have that kind of, there's no better Oregon forest than what we have, mm-hmm. and no better than outside of Oregon. I mean, everybody grows trees. Canada grows great trees, but not like we do in Southwest Oregon. That's why the redwoods just south of us are so pristine, so special, so monumental. And the Doug fir is always trying to catch the growth rate, of course. But that watershed produces, or those deep forests produce the best watersheds that produce the finest salmon and steelhead runs on the planet. And so I'm fiercely fighting that. And I'm really glad you brought up the fish issue. The Chetco, the Rogue, the Sixes, I'm very much involved in that. And a good friend of mine used to be my partner in the Jerry's Jet Boat Company. I owned part of that for 30 years. And he just sent me an email just a little bit ago. It says, Court, we're only getting 4,000 to 5,000 back to the Lost Creek Reservoir annually. We should be getting 40,000 or 50,000.
Wow.
Well, we
say that again.
So you're right on target there. But we're dealing with that in that we had a house, we had a House Bill 2379 that was challenging the Army Corps of Engineer program, the ODF&W, jointly managing Coal River's Fish Hatchery, Lee, which is halfway between Medford and Crater Lake. I've been there a dozen times. It's a neat part of Oregon, Lost Creek Reservoir. And so the water that's released out of that dam, which then takes Crater Lake is 210 miles the ocean, so from Lost Creek, it's about 180 miles to the ocean through Medford, Grants Pass, etc. Anyway, the Coal River's Fish Hatchery, I remember I was running tour boat on, in the early 70s, and when that dam was completed in 1976, the Coal River's Fish Hatchery, dubbed the largest commercial fish hatchery in the world, was going to produce tons of salmon and steelhead, was producing about a third or less. At that time, it was a great source of pride, but now this is what we got instead of getting 40,000 or 50,000 fish back to the dam. So we have a House bill. It didn't get through this session. We shall not give up. We will overcome. But it basically put the three Rogue Basin counties, and I'm working very closely with the three commissioners in Jackson, the three commissioners in Josephine County, and we come up with a little bit of funding to challenge the Coal River's Fish Hatchery management. And basically, they're not complying with the law to have full spawning beds. And I had a friend send me from down here in Brookings, actually, a picture that part of the spawning grounds is a gardening deal where they have these boxes. They've turned the hatch boxes into planter boxes. So, the people I run with that care so much about the fish, they are beside themselves.
So those figures you just gave me, it's not about the return of the salmon upstream. You're talking about what's produced at the fishery, just to be...
Well, both.
Oh, both.
You'll have natural runs, and you'll have the, of course, have the hatchery runs. And so the more fish you produce, the better for our sport fishing industry, our commercial fishing industry, the species in general. And there's an argument...
So when you're saying there's only 4,000 or 5,000, that's both of those groups.
It's tragic.
Oh.
It's tragic. I hate to let those figures come out of my mouth, but it's where I am.
Yeah, and we have a lot of issues. We have this incredible natural resource here, but we have to protect it. And it's not always easy to figure out exactly how in the face of everything that's going on nowadays,
Well, thank you. It has to be repeated, and the public is becoming more and more aware. I'm surprised we lost this bill in the House, but we drew some very good attention. We had a lot of bipartisan support, especially on the South Coast, and so we'll go to the short session next year.
What did that bill say in particular?
That the three Rogue Basin counties, Jackson, Josephine, and Curry, would have good standing to challenge the Corps of Engineers and even perhaps co-manage with and basically just require them to fulfill the what the law requires them to do, and they're not doing that. And
So one of the pieces
they're sitting with their feet up on the desk.
my naivety is that this hatchery is run by the Corps of Engineers.
Yes, under some, somewhat of the authority of the Oregon Fish and Game and Oregon Fish and Wildlife, and I've got I've got some things there that are not right, and yet I see some good things that they're doing too. So it's not an adversarial position, but it is something we have to remind them what we're dealing with down here, and we are.
Well, great. Let me just interject for anybody who's just tuning in now. You're listening to KCIWLP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. Thanks for that. So let's see. We were talking about the fisheries and the fire. Is there anything else about the fire that you want listeners to know about that you're particularly passionate about or concerned about?
Well, the solutions, I've been promoting that again around the state and federally with both of our senators, Wyden and Merkley, and with their staffs. I think we're getting some very good help there. And, you know, they take my phone calls, and they're not just being polite, but they care. And so I'm thankful to report that and somewhat dependent on their response to our issues. And so... Yeah, the solutions are better forest management, and the tools we have are, again, to protect the herbivores, to have smaller logging or harvest contracts, to not decommission roads. And you mentioned something there regarding the roads with timber access, with recreation mm-hmm. access, mm-hmm. with future firefighting access, even law enforcement. Is an issue,
right?
So we do not want our roads decommissioned in our backcountry. It's way more expensive than.
So somebody wants to decommission our roads?
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't know about this.
Sometimes the managing agencies, the Forest mm-hmm. Service and BLM, will decommission a road, even tear it up, because they claim over the years it's more expensive to maintain. And
right. So some of these old logging roads, mostly.
They're not even necessarily old logging roads. You know, that would take a little more time to get into.
Okay.
But the point is, don't decommission the roads. Don't keep the public out. Don't block them off, because the consequences for down the road are opposite of why we live here. We're not recommending new roads or new built roads. We're just mm-hmm. saying, for right now, let's mm-hmm. have a moratorium on road decommissioning.
I want to just segue to one thing that I have a lot of personal interest in. Well, first, before we do that, when you talk about protecting the herbivores, are you talking about wolf kills and that sort of thing? How do you want to protect them? I think people would want
to know
that.
Well, I'm glad you brought up wolves. Gentleman was here just before you arrived. He has spent some time and knows a little bit about wolves. And
that would be Ray Gary.
Yes, it was fun to talk to him. Absolutely. He's originally from Alaska. And,
right.
you know, if you bring more predators in, pretty soon we will have no deer and elk left. I mean, well, these are not native to Southwest Oregon. Now, the Native Americans...
They're not native.
No.
Oh, okay.
And they're not even a native species, because the Canadian wolves come into this part of the country, Idaho especially, and they killed out what were the native wolves, because they're a bigger, more aggressive critter. Mm-hmm. And when they're in the Canadian temperatures, 20 degrees on the average colder, they just kill what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the deer and the elk are gone in Southwest Oregon, what are the wolves going to do? They are very expensive to monitor. You can't, especially again to this rugged terrain. That's what I was mentioning to Ray, is that the rogue pack that was in the Jackson County area, they can't find them now. And we think they might be in the Calmeopsis wilderness. And so here we're spending money to tell people come visit here. And they're so cunning. They're very difficult to monitor. You can't do it with helicopters. They'll go deep in. People forget how rugged the terrain in Curry County is to the rest of North America.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I often find myself reminding people that we have less than 2% of the county that's buildable. And that means we're almost built out.
Well said.
Yeah.
Another issue.
Another issue.
Thank you.
Ted. Yeah. Any thoughts on that subject about affordable housing and what to do about it? Because I mean, I'm in real estate and I've got like 4 clients from the Paradise Fire. So we're getting refugees because it looks like Brookings is safe. It's on the water. It has a temperate climate. You know, people don't realize that we do face a lot of issues here that maybe are not obvious on the surface. And it is a wonderful place to live. You couldn't pry me out of here with a crowbar. But we are going to run more and more into this affordable housing problem. I know entrepreneurs around here, restaurant owners and such, that can't stay open as much as they would like because they can't get help. And the reason for that is the help can't find anywhere to live. And I know a couple of owners that are actually buying homes so that they can give their employees places to live, this kind of thing. All kinds of strategies are coming out of that. But what's your take on the affordable housing issue? What can we do?
Well, you mentioned land base. Yeah. We're working with the legislature to ease some of the restrictions on land use. And so that's one of the biggest ones. We have some wonderful potential developments in Curry County and affordable homes mm-hmm. for all income levels, certainly for middle and higher incomes. The displaced folks from Paradise, I mean, your heart just breaks because you want to work 24/7, and I know you are, to try and find them
right.
a place.
Yeah.
And that's part of economic development because those are the kind of people that you really want to attract to your community. And so to solve that problem, we have to roll up our sleeves and we have to find that buildable land. We have to promote good planning and yet support developers. Developers aren't going to come to an area unless they feel welcome, unless they feel like they can make a profit.
Absolutely.
Unless they can support the community. I mean, yes, there's the exception to the rule is ones that aren't caring. But the people I'm seeing in South County, one or two in Gold Beach, one or two in North County, you know, I think I'm a pretty good judge of character, but I am elated to have them here. And I don't want to bend the rules whatsoever, but I want to help them any way I can.
Sure.
People are dependent. Mm-hmm. On how well we do. We've got the state-of-the-art hospital in Gold Beach, Lee, as you know, and if we don't find homes for the care providers, I have
That's another group that has a really hard time.
And the schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, trying to attract and keep good teachers that want to bring their families here.
Right.
And so back to the hospital a minute, I have CHCPR, which stands for Curry Health Care Provider Recruitment, CPR on the end. And so I'm just pushing that a little bit and saying, okay, help us find homes for these people. We've got to solve these problems. And I see a little bit in the legislature that is starting to move, and we've got some people up there that'll carry that program. And it's not just Curry County. I think, of course, I can make the case that it's worst in Curry County, but I think most rural counties are finding it very difficult to deal with. But we've got to find them homes, and they're your point on lack of buildable land, we can overcome that at least in the next 10 years.
Well, it is complex because if you don't expand and develop more land, assuming we can find land to do that with, then you end up with this density problem. I've seen that happen in communities too, where prices go up really high and then you have like this incredible density where you've got, you know, apartment houses everywhere, and it just really impacts the quality of life. So it is a very complex issue. I don't see simple solutions to that one. When you talk about making things more buildable, what is your feeling about the idea of making it okay to have full-fledged second homes on a property where before we could have a little granny unit or something as long as there wasn't a kitchen, this type of thing? It seems to me that allowing for those second homes can be really helpful.
We have crossed that hurdle. The board passed accessory dwelling unit, and mm-hmm. so some of those restrictions have been eased. And if people are interested in doing that, I'm really battling to keep the fees as low as we can. When you come in to our building department, but it is reasonable, and hopefully it would be profitable to do that, or at least an incentive for people to have that second home. And there's one tool we have, and I think we've overcame that a little bit.
And what about tiny homes? Is there any encouragement about that? You know, homes that are well under 1,000 square feet, maybe 400 or so.
400 would be a tiny home. 1,000 would be a small home, I think, and you know that as good as anyone. You know, it's funny. The folks that are on the front lines, both at the county and even state level, that are trying very hard to solve this problem. I mean, they have a lot of dreams for the veterans, for small families. And so when you say tiny home, I picture a 400 square foot home.
Yeah, that's typical.
Yeah, and the county has land. I was with a group of faith-based pastors, ministers, the other day. A group was pulled together by the city administrator Howard, and the county has property that I think we could donate, and so we are working on that. And most of them are pretty odd shaped, and they may not have services, but you got to look at every possible option.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds encouraging. So also, I know, for instance, in Cape Ferrillo, they used to call that an exclusionary district, where you could take an RR5, that's a 5-acre parcel, and split it into two-acre parcels, minimum two each. But then they got rid of that. Is that something that's going to come back again, or what do you think on that level about splitting these larger pieces down in areas that are already pretty much residential?
You know, when you look at 5 acres, in best case scenario, a lot of times that could reasonably sustain 5 homes. And so when you hear of two, the county didn't do away with that zoning definition. The state, I'm sure, did. And so
I think you're right.
We're actually working right now on approving a Coos County ordinance, which gives the commissioners a greater say in some of the land use decisions before they go to appeals, because sometimes appeals are just automatic, and that's what discourages developers, and that's what slows down the whole process, and it destroys commerce. It makes it really, really difficult. Back to the homeless part of our population that is not, without means. I mean, there just is this unbelievable shortage, and so those are the frustrations we deal with, and that's why I spend a little time in Salem now and then again.
There are so many things to talk about. One thing I want to be sure we talk about is the condition of health care. Even now today, I have people occasionally leaving Curry County because they feel they can't get adequate health care here. And I know we've just built a hospital in Gold Beach, which is a big step up. I've met some of the administrators there, and they seem like they're doing a really fine job of bringing a new standard of health care. But here in Brookings, where we have 14,000 people, we're still kind of limping along with urgent care and not even a real emergency room to speak of. So I'm wondering, what do you think is the future of health care here? What's practical and realistic?
The South Coast Emergency Room facility is number 4 on my list of 30. In terms of priority and importance. Those lists change once in a while when we get new highway collapses or whatever. We just have to be on our toes and kind of expect, unfortunately, the unexpected due to the area where we live. I'm very proud of the healthcare we have here. No hospital is perfect, big, small, metropolitan, rural. The management of Curry Health Network right now, Curry General Hospital, I've watched very close for 4 years now, not quite 4 years, and I feel like with the board, the hospital board that they have, and I know all these people, that they are, I see the positive steps that they're making. I see, 2 years ago I said, you will see with this hospital and the healthcare providers that we have, someday people will come from outside of Curry County to get services here.
That'd be lovely.
And I really believe that. I that's not some talking point or some promotion. But Lee, I am extremely worried. I'm a South County commissioner. I'm a North County commissioner and a Central Curry commissioner, trying to get this county together in one important maybe the most important issue like that has been the most difficult part of my job. It's not because people are bad. It's not because people are wrong. It's just it's a very passionate issue. And yet the evidence is the way this is being managed the last 3.5 years, the transition between the old hospital, where I was like the fourth kid born in 54.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And the transition out of that hospital into the new hospital, I cut my leg really bad on October 14th, the night the Klondike fire flared up when at my home at Agnes. I'd come back and forth to Gold Beach. I welcomed the 11th two-week team, and all of a sudden we had a flare-up. Anyway, I hurt my leg real bad. I went in the emergency room. The care was unbelievable, incredibly good. And so I'm trying to tell all my South County friends, give it a chance. Let's see. You know, we have a bill right now before the Senate that still is possible it could pass, Senate Bill 941, that would bring $1.2 million to Curry Health Network specifically to open this emergency room down here. And that's one step. We may have a four-bedroom hospital down here someday. If we do our job and this and Brookings grows, South County grows, who knows what the future would be. But right now, the wisest move that Curry Health Network can make is to get that emergency room open and compete with Sutter. The best thing for my citizen is to have both a healthy Sutter and a healthy Curry General. And I think that's happening. That competition is really good for my citizens down here.
Great. So, Court, one thing I'm really interested in finding out more about is the state bill, I think it's called H.R. 2020. I believe it's a more or less a cap-and-trade kind of idea. What is your take on that bill? Is that something you follow closely?
Yes. Am I an expert in either 2020? I did attend some different meetings and listen to a lot of public testimony, both in the rural, the urban, both sides of the issue, Lee. If I could just offer one example, what it would mean for my county in additional fuel costs. My two biggest departments, of course, the sheriff's department and the road department. Mm-hmm. If you, let's just pull a number. Let's say it's 8% fuel price raise in 1 year. And we didn't budget for that because we didn't know.
Right.
That would be a major hit to our little county budget, which is only about $9 million. You know, we take in through the tax system almost $60 million, but that goes to all the taxing districts, the libraries, the cemeteries, the little fire districts. The schools get, I think, almost 60% of that $50
million. So we've got about $9 million that's discretionary, more or less?
Well said, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
And so... I look at the real or perceived, the perception toward business in Oregon, and you know, Oregon only puts out way less than 0.5% of the carbon emissions, and it's something we just don't know enough about. I would much prefer the state of Oregon to pay much more attention to the Oregon Department of Forestry and their tremendous record in fighting fires and the amount of carbon that was released just in the Checo Bar fire.
Oh, it was huge.
The loss of carbon sequestration is just immeasurable. And so, you know, it's one more hit that this little county is going to take. And we're down here where Fred Meyer is going to be dealing with increased transportation costs, and that's going to be reflected on the shelves. And I don't like that.
No.
I don't like that at all. And I sent out a heck of a news release saying, no, go to David Brocksmith's 3433. That was a balanced deal where we could have 1 year to evaluate, learn more, get more data, you know, get more scientific information to come in. And from that, we can say, okay, you know, we can do fuel raises in this part of Oregon, but maybe some of the little eastern Oregon counties, I don't know how they're going to survive, and I can relate to that with what we're dealing with here in Curry County. And that increased food and fuel and transportation costs is just a huge hit. I can't even, you know, measure it for you, but I'm...
So can you summarize just for folks who don't know what 2020 is?
Or it's a cap and trade. Yes, it's basically to tax fuel. I mean, just one example, if you have a diesel pickup or diesel vehicle older than 2006, it's going to be discontinued. You're not going to be, it's going to be illegal. I mean, that's why so many people went to the Capitol last Thursday, a week ago, not quite a week ago, and said, are you kidding? This divide between urban and rural Oregon is getting bigger, and this is not helping. I mean, I don't know any rural commissioners or any rural state representatives that are just saying this is going to devastate my citizens.
Well, it really
is. And that's pretty strong language, I know, but it's easy to back up.
Well, I think that it really is a concern, the things that you bring up about the increased transportation costs when you live rural, because everything is that much farther apart. I mean, even though I try to conserve fuel, I'm living on Cape Farillo, you know, if I have to go to town twice in a day, I feel really bad about that, but there's not much I can do about it. I can't walk to town. I can't move to town. It's not possible for me. So these are big issues for people, and I think that, you know, looking down the road here, both fuel costs and food costs are going to be a real challenge in Curry County. Being as how we're sort of a poor county to start with, when you've got, you know, all that cattle that died in the floods and all the crops that didn't get planted this year, and on the list goes, our food costs are about to get really high. I always say to people, you know, if you want to help about carbon, grow your own food as much as you can and plant a tree or a dozen trees, whatever you can do, you know, because like you said, trees are a great way to sequester carbon. And there's many challenges looking at us in the face here, and the answers aren't obvious, that's for sure. You're listening to KCIW LP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon. So, myself, I think I mentioned before, I'm pretty naive about local government, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that. Would you mind just giving us kind of a brief schematic of how it sets up to function, and how, if people have a point of view they want to put forward, how they get that point of view across to you as a commissioner? Do they come to a meeting? Do they write you a letter? How does that process work?
Well, thank you. And connecting with the people is, I think, one of our biggest responsibilities. County commissioners are kind of the judges, the lawmakers, and the managers of the county, and that's what they're elected to do. It's a pretty serious job. It's a big full-time job with, you know, just with these issues that we're dealing with.
Well, we've only scratched the surface. There's so much more we could talk about.
But it's, you know, I got off the river, and it's been a neat thing for my life. Like I said, I've met so many incredible people, and it's just been a big bonus, and been a lot of defeats, Lee. That goes with the territory, and you overcome those just by reading more and talking to people more and just contemplating the best way. I mean, I lived in the Rogue River Wilderness for 30 years, so it's where I raised my kids, and so I had to be pretty creative and innovative and you know, proactive, not reactive, in solving problems. So class 10, boat and trail only. So, and then I was a master gardener. I went through the Oregon State program. And so you mentioned growing your own food. Yeah. I think that's the biggest concern I have. My 9 grandkids, they're not going to know the difference between a tomato plant and a broccoli plant. So, you know,
right.
Yeah. But the commissioners, you know, they're very responsible on the budget. They are the overseers of the 7 main departments. As we go into the future, they've got to lay out a vision. They got to really do everything possible to pull the people together, the county together. I mean, when you look at North County and compare it to Brookings, South County, and Harbor compared to Gold Beach, and Agnes compared to Nasika Beach, it's really interesting. It's fascinating. So bringing those people together is a challenge, and we're looking at ways to to make that productive and efficient and, you know, even a little bit of fun.
And so when you say there's seven departments...
Seven major departments, yeah.
Yeah. So what are those, just to get a feel for it?
Okay, certainly the Sheriff's Department. You heard me mention the Road Department. Facilities and Maintenance. We have Community Development, which that didn't have anything to do with natural resources, but we had some issues there the last two or three years where we lost a ton of money, and we have hired the right people, and I'm the Commissioner Liaison there. It's Economic Development, Planning, Building. I'm really big into the parks. I've spent a lot of time there making sure that's headed in what I believe the citizens want me to suggest is the right direction. Let's see. Parks, emergency management, that's right up my alley.
Oh, I want to hear more about that. I wish we had more time. We'll have to come back another time to cover some of these other things.
This has been really great, and I'll be glad to.
Did we get to the end of the list? Was that something?
I mentioned economic development, code enforcement. We finally got a code enforcement officer, and he made a presentation the other day that just showed some of the blight around the county. Growing up here as a kid in Gold Beach, and yet I had buddies, I played baseball down here all the time in Brookings and great friends. You didn't see the homeless population. You didn't see people that yards, and in real estate, you see this all the time. So we just, where people burn cars, they leave their RVs. You know, I'm not a government thumb on you kind of guy at all. But, you know, when these people come from paradise and we want to provide them the best, then we can't have those kind of conditions. And so our code enforcement officer is under community development, and he went from half-time, I pushed hard, now he's full-time, and I want another code enforcement officer. It's going to be tough to budget, but that has to do with illegal marijuana grows. It has to do with people that are putting their affluent right over the edge of their RV, you know, abandoned cars. In the 60s, my dad, when he was sheriff, he documented picking up almost just shy of 500 junk cars.
Wow.
And taking them, I think in those days we took them to Crescent City, and he had the prisoners out helping him, you know, but he cleaned up the neighborhoods, and that was just something that he took a lot of pride in, and the people helped.
Well, in the old days, people didn't think about the long-term consequences. They had something to throw away, they just throw it in the nearest creek.
Yep.
Yeah, that was the way it was.
Well, we don't want that in Curry County.
No, not anymore, that's for sure. Speaking of the creeks, one of the things I run across a lot in real estate is people using the creeks as a source of their water, and they seem to think that anybody who borders a creek has got the right to take water out of that creek, which I don't think is exactly how it works. Haven't done a lot of research on this, but I was really shocked to see how many homes are dependent on water directly from the creek. They just throw a little pump in there, pump it up to their house, and that's their water source. No well, no spring development, nothing.
Would be outside the urban or outside the city boundaries, I
yes.
presume.
Yes.
Okay. Well, water rights is a very complex issue.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit familiar with that, and so if anybody's hearing me and you have a pump and you don't have water rights, we're not going to come and find you. But I would highly recommend working on that direction as quickly as you can, because water is a scarce source nationwide, statewide, and even in Curry County where it rains 85 inches a year.
It is. It so is. And once we get the rain down, because we don't have a big snowpack, then we're really on water rationing for the rest of the year. And there, we could go on about that for ages, too. But we're not going to get to do that today, unfortunately. But I appreciate what you're saying about the creeks, because I think people need to be aware that that isn't going to fly forever, no matter how who's running the government or anything else, because of the water scarcity that we're facing as we develop here. People eventually are going to crack down on that, inevitably, I think. Maybe not you, but maybe somebody else.
Well, it's a respect for your neighbors. It's a respect for your community. It's a responsibility. It's not unlike the FireWise responsibility. When you, as a neighbor, decide that you don't need to clear the brush, The risk you put your neighbors under. I mean, if you go up where you live in Cape Farello.
Yeah, I do.
You'll go up one driveway and mm-hmm. somebody has spent a lot of time to take care of the ground fields, make their place look nice. And then you go the next driveway and you go, this can't possibly be the same neighborhood. So I'm talking directly to those folks. Protect your own place from massive fire and fire fuel, and look out for your neighbors. And so that goes with just we're all in this together. We got to team up, and hopefully it goes without saying, but I felt compelled to mention that.
Oh, I do too. I mean, it's a big deal. I was talking with a fire fellow who goes around when there's a fire, deciding which home gets saved and which one doesn't. Little red flags and little green flags. And if you don't have defensible area, you get a red flag and they aren't going to fix it.
And there's a lot of people out there that do that for a living. They're reasonable. They need the work. And you'll never be sorry.
Yeah, it's true. Listen, we have run out of time, unfortunately, and I have so enjoyed this, Court. I'm so glad you could come. And I hope sometime you can spare the time and come back and talk. There's so many other things to talk about that we never even scratched the surface of. So thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you, Lee and KCIW, very much.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate it. And I guess I should say thank you, too, to Pi Wyatt, our technical support.
Thank you, Pi.
Thank you, Pi. And this has been Lee Tooley, the host, and this has been Court Boyce, our Curry County Commissioner, filling us in on all the, well, not all, but at least some of the passionate issues that are facing us here in Curry County. And thank you so much for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.